Now, Luke's gospel's got the good stuff. Luke's gospel tells of the angel Gabriel's appearance to Mary and of the girl's bewildered surrender to God. Luke's gospel narrates Mary's long haul from Nazareth to Bethlehem, 9 months pregnant and slung over the back of a hee-hawing beast of burden. Luke's gospel has got the mean innkeeper and the manger and all the heavenly host singing in Latin. Luke's gospel has got those slack-jawed, stupefied shepherds and all that glorious old language. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed, and so on. But Matthew's gospel gives us none of that. In Matthew's gospel, Mary has barely a walk-on part. Instead, it's Joseph who takes center stage. It's Joseph's family tree, Joseph's shame and state of mind. It's Joseph fixing to file for divorce, and finally, Joseph's faithfulness we see. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus is born not in a barn, but right at home. So there would be no ox, no ass, no cow mooing praise. And in Matthew's gospel, there is no vision of peace and goodwill to all. Quite the opposite. In fact, in Matthew's gospel, today we meet a murderous megalomaniac, King Herod. Now, maybe Matthew knew that a tyrant having genocidal tantrums is not likely to make it into the children's Christmas pageant. That maybe he knew that sort of play acting doesn't jive with the spirit of a church potluck. So happily for us, Matthew animates what would otherwise be a somber and rather bleak story with a bit of comic relief. Enter the Magi. Tradition has it that there were three of them. Now, we don't know for sure, but nativity scenes often depict them in threes, and usually nativity scenes depict them quite colorfully, don't they? There's one is always tall and lanky and looks like Abraham Lincoln, and one is always squat, sort of a Danny DeVito type, and one is splendidly corpulent, clearly having overdone it with the holiday cheese logs. Some say that they were kings. Some say that they were kings, three kings. But I think their fabulous and glitzy attire give them away. I think they were queens, if you know what I mean. Others portray them as wise men, three wise men, which is odd, I think, though. It's odd because the tale of their bumbling misadventure suggests to me that these were not three wise men. These were three stooges. Consider with me that first there was the fact of that famous westward leading star of wonder, star of night. The star gave them bad directions. The star guided them not to Bethlehem, but to Jerusalem, and not to the sweet baby Jesus, but straight to his bloodthirsty nemesis, Herod. It's a classic comedy of errors. The Magi travel, 1,000 or so miles, only to show up at the wrong house, only to end up, as luck would have it, landing first at the front door of the villain. The villain, whom they then inadvertently tip off. For the way Matthew tells the story, you know, Herod has been going about his merry way. And yes, he was being an evil Richard III type. And you know, he was working his malice and swirling his handlebar mustache. Mwahaha. But he was none the wiser about Joseph and Mary and Jesus. He knew nothing about them until along come the Magi. The Magi, whose reports really miff the king and stoke his jealousy and arouse his wrath. So King Herod enlists them as double agents. And King Herod sends them off. King Herod points them in the direction of Bethlehem. But evidently, these guys were hopelessly sorry navigators because the bright guiding star reappears. It reappears even though this time the guys only have to walk what would be the equivalent from here to the great Indian restaurant in Davis Square. They don't have to go very far, but thank goodness for the star. And so onward they schlep, and they arrive in time at Joseph and Mary's place. And Mary says, What? Won't you come in? And I imagine them doing that gag where the three of them step forward at the same time and get stuck shoulder to shoulder in the doorway. And Joseph whispers to Mary, "Honey, who are these guys?" And one of the Magi volunteers, "We come bearing gifts, traversed afar." And Mary's thinking, well, Jesus could use a new pair of those footsie pajamas, and we are low on formula, and you can never have too many diapers, right? How about one of those fancy up a baby Vista strollers with the detachable bassinets? And so Mary ushers them into the nursery, and they bow low before the crib, and they offer the child frankincense and gold bullion and myrrh. And I don't care what anybody says, these are weird gifts. These are gifts that no new mother would ever want. No new mother would ever register for these gifts. These are weird, inappropriate gifts. These are creepy gifts. Myrrh was an ancient embalming fluid. If you give somebody embalming fluid as a present, that sends them a message, you know? No one brings an urn to a baby shower and says, he'll grow into it. I don't recommend that. So Joseph and Mary, they give the guys the bum rush. The Magi are out the door in a hurry. They and their gifts are gone in a flash, never to be seen or heard of again. And we love these guys. Year after year, we lop off all the parts about crazy King Herod, and we pluck the Magi's sketch out from grim old Matthew's gospel, and we sort of plop it down in Luke's. Every pageant, every service of lessons and carols ever stages it like this, so that the Magi show up just as the clock strikes midnight, there at the manger with the angels and the shepherds. We love these guys. We can't have a proper Christmas without them. We change the story even just to keep them in it. We create a kind of mashup of a story. We love these guys. I think because we are these guys, you and me. I think these guys, more than Matthew's, these guys, Matthew's Magi, more than Luke's shepherds or Luke's angels or barnyard animals, I think their antics relate fundamental and pretty profound truths about religious people. For all their good intentions and their trying, they majorly goof. They think they are following God, and still they end up somehow in the wrong place at the wrong time, wouldn't you know it? They are seeking, they are searching for someone or something, even as they don't seem really to know what it is or where it is, or why it is that their souls are so restless in the first place. They are compelled, they are propelled on by an inexplicable hunger and a crazy hunch that there is something holy to see and behold, something more than and beyond what they yet have seen or beheld. And that's why I think they're us. That's why I like them. That's the thing about Matthew's Magi that speaks to me so deeply. They get lost along the way and they make a few missteps. But this impulse, this crazy impulse that compels and propels them and does drive our spirits too. This impulse that I think is as beautiful as it is absolutely hilarious, if you stop and think about it. This impulse to go find God. God who is right here and everywhere all around. But this impulse to go look high and low for God or for something more. And this impulse to then give ourselves to it. To have to then give everything, give anything to God. To God. God who wants for nothing. God who has in fact given anything and everything we could ever offer back. This impulse, this beautiful, funny impulse, this need to find God and give God whatever we can give God. This impulse which, when followed, when played out fully, only sets us up for the surprise, for the grand punchline, for the high, marvelous comedy of Christianity, that on the other end of our seeking, on the other end of all our seeking and searching high and low, is the one by whom we have already been found. And on the other end of all of our giving and sacrificing is the very one who has given us to ourselves, who in fact has made a gift and a sacrifice of God's own self. So I think that's the good stuff. Amen.